we're digging into an issue that's made a lot of headlines lately. This spring, 29-year-old Brittany Maynard was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. Doctors gave her 6 months to live.
After researching treatment options and a prognosis, Maynard decided she would pursue death with dignity. It's an option available for terminally ill patients that meets some requirements in 5 states.
Here's a clip of Maynard talking about how she felt once she filled her prescription for end-of-life drugs.
I can't even tell you the amount of relief that it provides me to know that I don't have to die the way that it's been described to me that my brain tumor would take me on its own.
Brittany Maynard's reopening the conversation right now about the right to die movement in the United States. Dr. Baron Lerner is here with us to talk about that debate now. He's a professor of medicine and population health in the Division of Medical Ethics at the New York University Langone Medical Center. He's also the author of The Good Doctor, A Father, A Son, and The Evolution of Medical Ethics. Welcome to Central Time.
Hi, glad to be here.
Well, on Saturday, Brittany Maynard took her own life with legally prescribed drugs from her doctor. What was her death like?
It was a death in this manner is generally gradual and peaceful. I mean, we don't know all the details, obviously, but the whole point of the aid in dying movement is to have a death that is as calm and controlled as possible. And the overdose of pills that people take generally make them gradually get more and more tired, sort of fall asleep, and then eventually pass away.
Now, she was prescribed the medication to have that death under the Oregon Death with Dignity Act. Can you tell us a little bit about that law and how it works?
That law was passed in 1997. It was the first one in the United States, and it's known as the Death with Dignity Act. And it basically allows patients who are terminally ill under very controlled circumstances to request a prescription from their doctor that they can then choose to use to end their life. And again, this is done. There's a bunch of hoops that people need to jump through, including asking themselves the first time, writing down a request, getting a second doctor's approval, that sort of thing. But if all of the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, a patient who is terminally ill has that option in Oregon and a few other states.
Do you have any idea how many people have used that option in Oregon?
Yeah, there's data. I don't have the exact numbers. It's roughly, I think, since 1997, more than 1,000 people have requested the medications, and about 750 or so have actually used them. So one interesting thing that we found is that not everybody uses them. That was sort of surprising, I think, at the start. But about 60%, I think, will go on and actually use the medication.
But there were hundreds that have used them over the years. But Brittany Maynard's death and her life before that, her openness about her choices and what she was considering, they sparked a new conversation. What was different about her in the way that she approached this?
Well, several things. One is she was willing and interested in going public with her story, which I think has been very, very useful in getting the discussion going. There was a lot of talk about physician aid in dying many years ago, but these topics always sort of come and go in interest, and it hadn't really been on the front pages for a while. So she was an eager participant in talking about what she was doing. And secondly, I think it's hard not to be compelled by a story of a 29-year-old woman just at the beginning of her life, married, and getting such a terrible tumor that was clearly going to kill her in such a rapid amount of time. So I think the combination of her openness and the dramatic nature of this terrible brain tumor in such a young person explains why we're so fascinated by what happened.
As we look at the choice that she made, what were her options aside from the one that she took?
I think that the other options, and it's very important to point these out because this is absolutely not for everybody, the other options were to get the treatment that she did, and then at some point in conjunction with her doctors, if they were going to stop aggressive treatments, there are lots of medications and other strategies that we would lump under the term of palliative care. So we're not going for a cure anymore, but we're making sure the person's comfortable, they have a good quality of life. Another option at the very end also might have been hospice, which is sort of a more formal program of palliative care where all of the treatment is devoted particularly to making the person comfortable and happy as possible at the end of their lives, relieving their symptoms and making sure that they get to visit with the people that they want to.
Now, we heard in that audio clip from one of her videos that she was horrified at the kind of death that the doctors told her she would have if she let the disease take its course with the various treatment options, and it would eventually end her life at the end of that, you know, 6 months or whatever it was. Is that, do you think, a reason that a lot of people consider is the kind of death that they have now and not just the length of the life?
Absolutely. You know, she had, from what I've read, she had already experienced a lot of complications from the tumor, such as seizures. I think, I don't know if she actually had a stroke, but her brain was acting as if she did. So she was already getting very debilitated. It would only get worse. As the tumor gets larger and larger and you lose more and more brain function, she would have been increasingly immobile, helpless, dependent on others, possibly in more pain, more nausea. You never know. Every case is different. But these were reasonable things to expect as she got worse and worse. And another important point in her case, she was 29 years old and probably had as healthy a heart and kidneys as you can imagine. So she potentially could have lived an incredibly long time in a very, very debilitated state had she not chosen to do this.
Now, it's worth pointing out that the route she chose, it was not doctor-assisted suicide. It was death with dignity. Can you talk a little bit about the differences?
Yeah, the whole point of the Death with Dignity Act is that the doctor, and one of the interesting things is looking at how the language has changed, and sometimes the devil's in the details. So initially, people were using terms like doctor-assisted suicide, which somehow implied that doctors were there at the time and actually administering things. And people realize that's absolutely not what's going on. That's not a good term. So we also talk about things like aid in dying. That's another term that's been used. And death with dignity is what Oregon has chosen. And again, the point to emphasize is that the interaction with patient and doctor occurs in the doctor's office as part of the care of the patient. Lots of discussion goes into this. But when and if the patient decides to use the medications, the doctor is not present. Who will be present is usually the close family and whoever the patient decided to invite at that time. So the role of the doctor is a finite one. It's helpful, but they're not actively involved.
And this is available in 5 states, right?
Yeah, I think it's 5 now. Oregon, Washington, Montana, Vermont. I mean, it's either, there may be one more. It's on a bunch of ballots coming up, but several other states are also attempting to put laws in as well. I think it's 4 or 5 now.
Now, Brittany Mader wanted to influence the public debate by going so public with what she was going through. Has she succeeded?
Oh, you bet. I mean, that's why we're here today. Yeah, I think, again, you know, and a point I'd like to reiterate is a minority. It's interesting. When the Oregon law was first passed, a lot of ethicists and other folks were sort of pulling their hair out and saying, oh, my God, this means people are all going to, everyone with a terminal illness is going to rush to Oregon and do this. And we found exactly the opposite. So there's really a select group of people who, on a combination of their illness and their personality and their families, feel that this is an option that they want to explore. A lot of people talk about control. A lot of people are concerned about unremitting pain or nausea that might not be treatable by medication. So you're talking about a small percent of people. Most people, a vast, vast majority of people will die not through this means and using things like palliative care and hospice that in many cases actually can control symptoms extremely well, even at the end of life.
Now, there have been critics about what Brittany Maynard did, and one of the criticisms is that should the United States move in this direction, we face, you know, the slippery slope argument that there might be a case like this, a young person who has a terminal illness, 6 months to live, and maybe horrible pain and debilitation at the end, but there might be someone else who maybe is depressed. There was a woman in Holland who had tinnitus ringing ears and wanted to end her life, and exactly where you draw that line.
Well, this is why there's safeguards in place. Doctors, for example, would not classify a depressed person with tinnitus as terminally ill, one hopes. So the underlying question to start is what is the illness, and is it truly indeed a terminal illness? Now, I will say that you mentioned Holland, and certainly we had experience in this country many years ago with Jack Kevorkian, who was more actively assisting patients with suicide, and many of the people that he assisted in retrospect were not terminal. So there's always the danger of misuse of this type of technology, this type of a procedure, but I don't think that's a reason not to offer it. It's a reason to tighten up the structures that doctors follow for this and patients follow, and to, quite frankly, study it and make sure that these things aren't happening.
We're talking right now with bioethicist Dr. Baron Lerner of the NYU Langone Medical Center about the Right to Die movement. This weekend, terminal cancer patient Brittany Maynard decided to end her life on her own terms with a prescription she got from a doctor under Oregon's Death with Dignity law.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're picking up on our discussion with bioethicist Baron Lerner about the Right to Die movement in the United States. It's been sparked by the death of Brittany Maynard.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts. If you were diagnosed with a terminal illness, would you want this option of what Oregon is calling death with dignity? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go to our first caller now. David is joining us in Spring Green. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you? Well, I'm very much in favor of death with dignity, and I would like to have that option myself. I have an incident in my own family. My mother's younger sister was diagnosed with spinal cord cancer. They lived in Los Angeles, and this was in the 1950s. And it progressed, and by the time she was in her early 30s, she was terminally ill, a paraplegic. And they fortunately had a good enough relationship with their doctor. She wanted to die. And even though I don't think it was any part of a legal apparatus at the time, the doctor did authorize a lethal dose of morphine. And she was able to pass on her own terms. And I think it was something that my grandmother and her whole family, I wasn't born at the time, but felt that it was the right thing to do, and they were grateful that they were able to do it for her. I would say, though, that as a footnote, my grandmother then became very active in what used to be called the Hemlock Society. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to have control over her own death and you know, choose when that was going to be. She did end up stockpiling some sleeping medication that she had gone down to Mexico to get. And when she was 87, about a year after her husband of 62 years passed away, she decided to go ahead and take her own life, even though she was not terminally ill. And, you know, that's sort of a different situation. That's more, you know, obviously a suicide. But she felt philosophically that she had a right to do it, and I guess I have a hard time disagreeing with her.
Okay, thank you, David. Thank you for sharing those stories. It's interesting how it went through the two members of your family, and obviously your grandmother believed in what she had done. And it's also interesting, Dr. Lerner, that the morphine was something that happened there via the doctor. Is this something that perhaps happens more often than we think, just not not framed as doctor-assisted suicide?
These days, that's pretty hard to do. I think this reflects a more sophisticated approach to end-of-life issues. So that is not an uncommon story from that era. Controlled substances were much less highly regulated, et cetera. Now, we give a lot of morphine to terminally ill patients and other medications, but we give it not to end their lives, but to treat their discomfort, whether it's shortness of breath or pain. If the person happens to stop breathing during that treatment and die, that is an expected possible outcome. But we would not call that euthanasia at all, whereas the first story that the caller made sounds like euthanasia, which is really something that should really be rare in this country or really anywhere, I think. Certainly a doctor playing that role.
Well, thank you for that call, David. And we're going to go next to Jean joining us in Ashland. Hi, Jean.
Hi. The doctor and the patient show tremendous ignorance. Suicide is murder of the self, and murder has consequences no matter who it's done to. And there's not enough thinking or education. They simply want to escape their temporary. Don't worry, we all die. They're just their temporary situation, and
so Jean,
there's much to know.
Jean, are you objecting on religious grounds?
Religious grounds. You don't. It all depends on whether you believe in an afterlife or not. If you think this is just what this is all we have, and so let's get on with it and be dead, that's the wrong thinking.
Okay, thank you so much, Jean, for calling and sharing your thoughts. And Jean saying it's murder of the self, and it's wrong.
This is a big push-button issue, and there have always been very strong arguments against suicide, both from a religious and a moral perspective, and those are going to persist. And people are definitely entitled to that argument. I think to underscore in this particular case is that this is a voluntary thing. No one is mandating this. We don't even want to be using the word suicide because of those connotations, I think. And there's a difference of opinion. So while some people really feel that any type of premature ending of life is murder or wrong, there are many others who make a cogent argument that in particular circumstances, being more aggressive than merely waiting for your body to stop working is appropriate.
Well, thank you, Jean, for the call. And we're going to go next to John in Dickeyville. Hi, John.
Yes. Am I on?
Uh-huh. You're on the air.
Okay. In May of last year, I had the unfortunate task of finding my brother, who was an MS survivor or MS sufferer. He had taken his life in his basement by using a gun. Had he been able to use the option of assisted suicide, he could have done it with more dignity. And I wouldn't have had to, find him there with a gun to his head in the basement of his house.
I'm sorry you went through that, and sorry for your brother as well. And thank you for sharing your thoughts on this. Dr. Lerner, is this an option that you think would prevent people from doing more drastic things, having more control?
Yeah, I think it is a good option in that sense. There are always people who, at the end of an illness, a terminal illness, have been feeling that they need to end their lives. Obviously, we don't know all the details in this particular case. One hopes it was not something like depression. And, one of the other advantages of the death with dignity type deaths is that there's a doctor involved. So the pills, again, would not be given unless they've made sure the patient isn't depressed, that there aren't other possible things to happen. This poor man, without that option, decided to take matters into his own hands, literally. It's obviously a very, very sad story, and one does hope that, again, for that segment of patients interested in this type of option, I do think getting pills from your doctor and going through the whole process is the most humane and logical way to try.
And we leave it there. Dr. Lerner, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
That was Dr. Baron Lerner, Professor of Medicine and Population Health in the Division of Medical Ethics at New York University Langone Medical Center.